We'll talk about a case today. Well, one thing that's on my mind is President Trump's response to former FBI Director Robert Mueller dying at 81. That was not acceptable. New story out about a Minnesota millionaire who qualified for food stamps. This fraud by design. We see that in a lot of places, and I think that's a consequence of big government. We'll talk about that a little bit too. And thank God for those like Nick Shirley who are out there exposing the kind of corruption that happens in our big government like this. It's costing you money. And more than that, quality of life. I'll talk about that here too. There's also a Maryland Supreme Court, which has a ruling there that tossed out some of these Blue City climate lawsuits against energy companies for a very good reason. And I think our Montana Supreme Court should pay attention to that. We have open phones today on Voices of Montana. The SAVE Act, of course. Troy Downing's going to be on tomorrow. He's our Montana congressman, and he'll talk more about this. He had a telephone town hall recently where one of his constituents had talked and noted about some of the things that he had said is in that act. So we'll kind of get into that in more detail tomorrow. And I've got some things about it here today as well. I'll just say I am not at all at ease about where we're at with election integrity. I do believe that we have stolen elections in this country, and I do believe that a lot of people feel the same way. And the remedy for that is how about registering? And I know that people have said, oh, it's voter suppression, especially for females. Well, look, it's requiring a male to do the same thing. You might have had a name change or a divorce or this and that. It's a lot to do about nothing. Go ahead. Make it a clean slate for everybody and make me register again and bring my birth certificate and bring whatever secondary piece of identification that's necessary in that regard. I'll do it. This is just too critical for us to overlook. And we've seen it now. I mean, this stuff that happened in Fulton County is verified. 315,000 questionable, probably illegal ballots. I've got more information on that as well. We're seeing this now. There's a group called Unite for Freedom. Of course, they're going to be right-leaning because the left-leaning groups are trying to protect this weak, I think, system, especially when we look at now with 11 million to 20 million illegal immigrants just let in the country. It was mass immigration weaponization by the Democrats. And seeing how there are so many places, there are a number of states, I think it's New Jersey, where you don't have to, you can sign up for a driver's license. And they say, are you a U.S. citizen? And all you have to do is check a box. And you don't have to show any other form of ID. And that's the same state that will automatically register you to vote when you sign up for your driver's license. It's those kinds of things. And we have to be on the lookout for that because it's watering down your vote. And again, I say this. I think it comes from the Democrats who don't have good policies. They have shifted so far to the left that their party is leaving them. But it doesn't matter because, we'll give them seats. We'll redistrict so that they have seats. We'll call it fairness. And then it can continue what to me is, and I'll talk about it here too, a radical agenda. But I'm going to start with this. This is very disappointing from this president, this response. And I waited. I looked so hard to see if this was a fake post. And the mainstream misleading us, not talking about it a ton. I've not seen the White House address this, so I'm going with the knowledge at this point after several days that President Trump did post this on Truth Social, and it wasn't a late night thing. There's no excuses. He said Robert Mueller just died. Good. I'm glad he's dead. He can no longer hurt innocent people. It matters, right? And that is unacceptable. And I call out this president for that. I know it's hard to be a better version of yourself at times, right? I think we can all say we struggle with that. In my mind, I'm a kind man. But sometimes in reality, I'm a little bit disgusted at some things. And the kindness is hard to reach because, again, I feel Excuse me, still got that cold or whatever it is. At times I'm saddened by it that I wind up having to process through some of those frustrations to get to that place where there is kindness, because we all need that. We need it more, and we need it every day. But this is very disappointing here. I understand there's a lot of things that go into this, right? Trump's shot at him a couple of times, right? And they used bogus lawfare. They really came after this man and his family and his businesses and all his associates. I mean, you remember this Arctic Frost that they're talking about now, where the FBI subpoenaed illegally tracked phone records of a number of senators. I think there were 8 of them. And again, that's the deep weaponization of the deep state. And we saw it an awful lot in the Obama and Biden administrations. Okay. I know of Trump's flaws. All right. He's certainly not making appeasement the center of his presidency. And I'm okay with that, because I've never been a guy who holds any man up to idolization standards, because I know we're all flawed. I mean, it's in Romans, the great equalizer, right? All have fallen short. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And so I believe that. And I think, you know, in our daily life, we have to remember that. And that's why grace is so important, especially nowadays, to extend, but also to receive. So I know of Trump's flaws, right? But I'm not looking at Trump. I'm looking at these policies that in this country that have taken us off track. I like the calling out of the fake news, because I've been in the news industry, and I've also been a political a PR person on the Republican side. You know that. I've spoken about that. And I have seen the fake news in action, and it is such a disappointing development in this country that it used to be so important, and there was a lot of reverence given to our mainstream media, and we've seen them essentially just flat out lie and protect and cover up for bad policies. One note here too is that your response is making they're taking note, okay? And thanks to President Trump for calling out the fake news. I don't think he's very kind about it at times, but I don't think he's wrong either. And CBS Radio News, by the way, is actually going defunct. Their entire radio news network maybe they're reshaping it, but I know that they've given out notices that they are going to cancel their CBS News on the radio. And why is that? I think that's because people are not trusting that mainstreamist lady. And if you ever listen, I do listen to CBS News, and only for a couple of minutes, because I have to turn it off. Again, that frustration level goes up when I hear the reporting, and it's nuanced. It really is. It's the words that they use and how they phrase things and when they insert things and the things that they choose to leave out. So I'm glad for that. This international appeasement of terrorism. Okay. I never got that. You know, Hillary Clinton did it when she was Secretary of State. President Obama ships cash. I mean, ships cash on pallets, and it wasn't even American cash. It was Swiss francs. And the French franc as well. Why? Because they can't be tracked like the American dollar can. What was that for? That was a total appeasement policy for radical terrorism. And then Biden did the same thing when he unfroze some accounts for that regime. And what about Afghanistan, right? Why did we leave billions of dollars of equipment behind? We were not being chased out of Afghanistan. That was a withdrawal that some say was long overdue, but after 20 years, we didn't have to run out of there and leave. That's weapons, weaponry, and that was equipment, and probably tech too. Why did the Biden administration choose to arm the enemies of the United States when leaving that country? There's no rational explanation for that. So that got me. And the fleecing of America by its enemies, I see that in a lot of places. And then, you know, drag queen story hour. That doesn't make sense to me. And I see liberal education groups are advocating not only for gender surgery for minors, right? And I just don't know how you think you've got a leg to stand on there. I know that there are there's gender dysphoria, and it happens very, very infrequently. Most all of this stuff is just behavioral. And drag queen story hour. And it's not just, you know, the gender surgery for minors, but transgender education. We've talked about it here where there was a homework assignment that was essentially, and I didn't bring it up again because it disgusts me, a homework assignment that was sent home to kids in the third grade, I think it was. Not even that. Maybe it was even younger than that. But this transgender community is attacking education. At that level, at the first, second, and third grades. And that homework assignment was essentially to go home and practice touching yourself. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a summation on my part, but I'm not off. And then this weaponizing of mass immigration. There was no other policy directive to benefit the American people. It was a group of people, in my mind, that were pushing this agenda to stay in power. And continue pushing that radical anti-American agenda. Another one, lawlessness. Yeah. Thanks for writing that down, Tom. Because this whole defund the police, tired of government shutdowns so Democrats can unmask or dox our ICE agents and put their families at risk. That's one of the things they want. They want ICE agents there's a way to identify themselves. And in that package that the president has proposed, it was better identification methods for these ICE agents. But the Democrats say, no, we don't want them wearing masks. We only want Black Lives Matter and those paid protesters who want to go in and vandalize. We want them to have masks because that's a public safety thing. But not our ICE agents. Again, I'm not waiting for the Trump Bible to come out. But I do see a necessary unveiling of, in my mind, the depth of this corruption. And he's pushing back on it, so he has my support. I can say that I'm disappointed in this. And very much I am. And that's that's why I waited. I looked around as much as I could to find if this was fake news or not, because it seemed that way to me. But I guess it's also not out of character for Donald Trump to lash out like that too. And do I make excuses? That's not making an excuse. That's me saying I disagree with some of this man's methods. And I thought there was an opportunity there as well to get more of the center or even left-leaning voters to come under that big tent, but that the idea of a big tent kind of closes up a little bit when you hear statements like that. So that was wrong, but I am still standing behind the man because this country was very much on the wrong track and we needed some redirection in that regard. If you have thoughts on that, share them with me, 866-627-5483. Am I wrong about it? Should this statement then just make me disassociate with this president? Scrambling around looking for my bracket. No, not the one that's in pieces. That's not the NCAA bracket. The WNIT bracket. Yeah, that's the one I'm following now. Women's National Invitational Tournament. Montana State, that really good women's basketball team, is hosting a game tonight in Bozeman. It's the WNIT calls it the Super 16 at the Brooke Breeden Field House. 7 o'clock tonight, too. I've heard, I don't see it in this report, but I've heard that like the first 300 kids that come in and what was our 2200 plus in last week's win over San Francisco at Brooke Breeden, an electric atmosphere according to the coach, and that was the highest attendance of a WNIT game across the country. So kudos, good on you there too. and the crowd was into it. And so they're jacking that up with some offers and some pizza at halftime for this game as well. And it's Portland. Not Portland State, but the University of Portland, the Pilots. I was noted, I don't have that score in front of me. I think it was a dozen points or so where the Bobcats beat Portland earlier this year. They're not a member of the conference, but they are a frequent opponent. Anyway, but that's different. That was probably preseason or pre-conference season. So both these teams are different and improved, and that'll be real cool. That's one of the good stories, right? I'm sitting here looking at, you know, we got Good Friday coming up, and it's a season to think about our blessings here and the sacrifice, that paved a way to heaven for us by Jesus. And so there's goodness in that, but also, you know, it's tough. There's a little darkness in that whole story too. Anyway, today I'm looking for some good, and there's one at the end. I think Cody's got a few here that we can talk about. Another thing I'm going to get on the plate too that Cody covered earlier this week, I think, or maybe even last week, was this coal seam fire public meeting tonight. So I'll get on that here in a moment. But Lisa's standing by in Miles City. Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for listening on that great station. We love our friends there, KMTA, and you're on the air here on Voices.
Good morning, and all the things that you're talking about and the social media is getting sued and everything, because all these things that you're talking about create anxiety because we don't have any control over it. So I try to, and landlord tries to, focus on what we can control. And that's why I wanted to call in today, is talk about landlord's life. And I watched a movie called Lowdown, and that's with Meryl Streep. And it's a story about a man who was a jazz musician, but he was hooked on heroin, and he had a daughter, and it was the saddest life I've ever seen, because her mother was an alcoholic, so both parents were unable to take care of their 13-year-old child, and that's how landlord grew up. She had parents who couldn't care for her, but instead of following in their footsteps, she made this conscious decision to work over drugs. She worked physically. She did factory work and construction work, and promised to help people. And she made a lot of money doing it. And so I asked her, how did you overcome all that? And she said that she believed in the words of Jesus Christ, that as I do, so can you, if you truly believe. So I wanted to share that inspirational story, true story, with you on how she overcame so much negativity, because she believed that as I do, so can you, if you truly believe, and that means creating miracles.
Lisa, thanks for sharing that, and give landlord our best too. I mean, and that is an important, and you yourself have had some struggles and have gotten through those with probably the help of landlord and others too. And boy, that's another aspect, as we talk about some of the things that are wrong in our society and things that we need to adjust. But we also talk about the values that are still important. We talk about how people are actively engaged in bettering their communities. And a lot of it happens on that one-on-one basis too. Those are the millions and millions of stories every day. And there's also sad stories every day too. Like a child who is stuck at home in an abusive parental relationship. And it's worse. You can imagine them. In fact, you don't have to imagine them. You probably know people who have lived them. And you know the damage and the consequences. But there are also those other things, the goodness that happens every day. And I love to hear that. I love to hear those stories. And landlord, I'm glad she was successful. But it took a spirit inside her to give her strength. And I think that's what we all need, too. Nowadays, I don't know how we can separate truth from the lie if we don't have a discerning spirit in us. And a lot of that is through the grace that's offered. There's an entire doxology to talk about Christ and the sacrifice on the cross, a God who essentially ripped off a part of his own flesh as an atonement for sin. And that is a beautiful, beautiful story. And that is actually everything I see, honestly. It's leading into that story in its grand ending. But watching some of these things happen is a little bit frustrating. So I appreciate you listening. I appreciate your phone call there as well. I'm going to say it's not only the fact that we have no control. That's one of the things I think you give up when you recognize a higher power. And then when you recognize the availability of that power through the Spirit. Again, I know this is it's a religious and spiritual part of our discussion. I'm reading a book right now, too, and it's taken me a while. It's written by a guy. He's actually more of a leftist than he is on the right side of things. Michael Ware is his name. The Spirit of Politics is the name of the book. And it was it's a paperback, and I didn't think it would take that long to get through. There was a lot of concepts in there, and I'm probably going to try and reach out to him after I read this book and put it in perspective for you, what's valuable there, and have him come on. But there's that acknowledgement of the loss of our moral knowledge and our spiritual application in our government. And a lot of it, there's a lot of reasons for it, and part of it is because we have been told to separate it. Well, okay, we can separate church and state, but we don't have to separate the values that are espoused in good spiritual connectivity, and therefore each other. It leads to a better society, not a worsening society. So there's a lot of things there to share, and I'll learn more about that. That it's not only the fact that we don't have control, too. It's also flat wrong. We see things out there, and that's a whole another aspect, again, of this book I just referenced about our moral knowledge. We have partitioned that off into a certain place, and a large part is because we want a definitive separation of church and state. So we throw everything into this church category and say, well, it has to stay over there. It can't come into our government. But there are a lot of values that do, and in fact, our entire country was based on many of those values, right? There's some, you can make an argument about secularism in the founding papers. There's certainly plenty of that, but you cannot make the argument that there is no spiritual connection to the creation of this country, the values that we espouse, freedom, right? I mean, that free will, that God, in my mind, okay, has given you is so precious. It's so precious to him. It's so precious to you in that spiritual relationship. It's very precious to us as well in our relationship with each other. And through that, in our relationship with our co-government together. So we know things can be flat wrong, and we can push back against them. And then see what happens, right? When you know the truth and you try to espouse the truth and move it forward to make positive changes, who's going to attack you? Who's going to prevent that? And what does that say? There's a lot of things I think we ask on a daily basis here as well. It's called, good jurisprudence. And it was accidentally maybe exercised in a Maryland Supreme Court decision that had tossed out some of these Blue City climate lawsuits against energy companies. I'll have more on that in just a bit. Welcome back. Open phones at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. I'm interested in talking about this, but let's take a time out here and talk about something that Cody Ross, you had done this story, and I think it's rather interesting about this coal seam fire mitigation going on. There is a public meeting. I'll get that information out tonight. And it's in Eastern Montana. It is at the Custer County Event Center in Miles City. Starts at 1 o'clock. It's not this evening. It's at 1 o'clock, and it's to talk about. It's a stakeholder meeting for coal seam fire mitigation. Cody Ross again, yes, does sir. a ton of news here. You talked with Corey Chagas. Yeah,
yes.
Who's out there fighting these fires on a daily basis? Why don't you share some of the things that you learned that stand out to you?
Well, he was explaining since 2012, 13, around that time when there was a lot of, we had a lot of that, the big fire through eastern Montana that took out a lot of wild, you know, the lands across the eastern part of the state. There's coal seam fires that are out there, and they've been there for years and years and years.
Years and years, right, yeah.
And then it takes, a lightning strike, and it'll set one off, which then starts off the wildfires, and then starts off even more coal seam wildfires or coal seam fires. And so what they're doing right now is they got some money from the DNRC to do some mitigation, the coal seam fire mitigation work on them, and to try and, keep them from continuing to grow and keep growing. But I know that it's like chasing chickens or wild cats, I feel, for the folks that are out there fighting those wildfires.
I'm going to try to get Corey on the air next week. And then we'll kind of get response from after this meeting here too. These things are they impossible to put out? I mean, part of this meeting, we'll talk about some of these fire mitigation methods. So maybe it's just one of those things they're trying. You can't keep her from scoring, but you can contain her, so to speak.
Yes. And they have to, put fire lines around some of this stuff. And they help, the ranchers and the farmers that suffer. They're like, hey, all of a sudden, they'll get a call. Hey, we got a fire going on over there, or there's some smoke. Go check it out. And then it's burning down deep down in the ground, these coal seams, because Montana, eastern Montana's got, we've got the largest deposit of coal in, in the country, right in this, this area up and down into Wyoming and stuff. But it's just, how do you get them out? I remember as a kid, and even later on, when living in Terry, you'd go up out of, across the Yellowstone up into the Badlands, and I'm like, why is there a fire going on, right? Who put some stuff on the side of the road and it's burning? And that's coal seam. That's a coal seam on fire. Wintertime, you see the smoke coming up.
You do.
And it's like, what? It's just a kind of interesting. And at the same time, what do you do? I know they have drones that they take and they, try and map out where these are at. But once they get it mapped, I think it just grows.
Yeah.
And it just keeps growing.
Well, it's not unusual. I mean, the whole earth is made of fire anyway,
Yeah.
So we'll look into that more. But anyway, that is a meeting. And look, I think it's important, mitigation on private land. So that they're going to talk about that. They've got, like I said, mitigation, prioritization, and ranking. So they'll talk about what are the key areas they're going to attack first, and then why these things must be mitigated. Anyway, at 1 o'clock, that gets underway. It's going to last a little over an hour. It's in at the Custer County Event Center in Miles City. So this is one of those news things that I think, again, I say it, there's still hope. There's still a lot of things that we get to do, right? It's not entirely out of our control. We still have a lot of avenues for that control, and we've got to protect them, and then we've got to use them, and hopefully in the right way. And I know that your decision on what is right may be based on different things than mine, and if we don't agree, that's fine. But if we're out there voting and there's honesty in our data, then we're going to have good outcomes. This is a 3-2 decision out of the Maryland Supreme Court earlier this week that dismissed three lawsuits that were filed by Democrat-run jurisdictions. They were claiming oil and gas companies concealed information about their products' contribution to climate change, leading to significant costs. And these were the cities of Baltimore, Annapolis, and Anna-Arundel County. They, according to this 3-2 decision, improperly tried to use state and local nuisance laws to financially punish defendants such as BP, ExxonMobil, and Chevron when climate change and its causes are an international issue that cross local, state, and international borders. And here's a direct quote here, quite again from the Justice Berna Booth, who wrote this majority opinion. Quite simply, and this is a Maryland court, okay? So there was no need. This is a Center Square report, and I've talked about the Center Square. They are what they say they are, and they do have news in every, well, I don't know their corporate structure, but they've got news outlets in a lot of the states, including Montana here as well. But this is a Maryland Supreme Court, and there's no note here about whether it's a liberal or conservative court, but Maryland's very much a blue state. Quite simply, the notion, and again, this is from this ruling from Justice Booth, quite simply, the notion that a local government such as Baltimore, Annapolis, or Anne Arundel County may pursue state law nuisance claims against the defendants seeking injunctive relief to abate injuries arising from global greenhouse effects, arising from worldwide conduct, is so far afield from any area of traditional state or local responsibility that it cannot be seriously contemplated. What is that saying? I've talked about this, and we've had Rob Nadelson on, again, a constitutional scholar, a guy who knows these tenets of good jurisprudence. And these are things that are taught in schools, judicial restraint. Courts should decide only what is necessary, avoid unnecessary constitutional rulings, and stay within their bounded authority. Judicial restraint. We do not see enough of that in our courts. Courts cannot, this is justiciability. Courts cannot decide cases without standing, ripeness, mootness, and no political questions. These doctrines prevent courts from issuing advisory or unenforceable opinions. Stare decisis, respect for precedent to ensure predictability, stability, and consistency in the law, fidelity to the rule of law. I'm gonna get to the one I'm talking about here too. And the court cannot issue orders that are impossible to comply with. This is called the impossibility doctrine in judicial remedies. It's also known as the feasibility requirement. And it simply states that remedies must be within the court's jurisdiction capacity to enforce the doctrine of practical enforceability. All right. And why do I say that relates to Montana? That held versus Montana decision, which they left, I think, enough room in there for the legislature to respond, but they're going to, because that court is so liberal and they have been, they're going to nix anything that the legislature proposes. Again, that's maybe too grandiose of a summary here, but I have those concerns, right? But the entire ruling in and of itself, I think, violated this important principle about law and the court's ability to apply the law. So what this means is a court shouldn't rule or force an injunction that it cannot enforce, or it requires action outside the court's jurisdiction. And that's a key one there, because it's impossible to validate the impact of climate change on every shovel that the DEQ says you can dig for a project that will probably benefit your community. And then another one here, it also means that it demands conduct that is legally or factually possible, and it forces a party to comply with contradictory or unattainable requirements. That's another one of these key tenets, part of this principle here that I talked about, the impossibility doctrine. And I see that here in this state Supreme Court ruling with Held versus Montana, that it forces the state of Montana to comply with the contradictory or unattainable requirements, because it is still not a settled science, despite what the advocates want to tell you about it. And I don't spend every open phone opportunity talking about it, but the climate change is still very much in flux when it comes to understanding what the human impact is, what the natural impact is, and even what the impact is of carbon on climate change. And we've talked about it here too. Carbon is in everything. It's in your body. It's not as predominant in the atmosphere. I think it's 0.04%. And so that's the practicality of all these rulings coming out regarding climate change, is that they are forcing remedies that are unattainable onto a science that is unproven. I want to get to the bottom of it. I and like everybody else, I think, have great respect for our environment, but I don't think everybody believes like I do that we can actually have prosperity and a clean environment at the same time. And we got to work it out. I mean, I know there's no clear cut path for that too. And I've spoken about, I think some of the value of Democrat policies in the past regarding our environment. It did force us to understand and move technologically advanced applications for mining forward. And that's been a good thing. So I think that's one area where I'd like to see cooperation on here. But this this whole climate thing is, there's a whole different agenda behind it as well. So I think both sides have to recognize where that's coming from so we can get to some place in the middle that does ensure a cleaner environment along with the responsible use of resources, multiple use, and prosperity for the people. Because that's, I think, a good direction to go. Anyway, notes on that today as this Supreme Court ruling came out here. All right, I'm getting this in as well. The population of monarch butterflies wintering in Mexico has increased by about 64% this year. All right, that's good news. Scientists track monarch populations by measuring the forest area the butterflies occupied during the winter, and 1.79 hectares to 2.93 hectares, the largest increase seen in several years. There's a bit of good news for you, the monarch butterfly making a comeback. Congratulations to all. Skip, give us a final thought here today.
Oh, okay, sir. And thank you, by the way, for being so exact. And Rob Nadelson, and so would Judge Wilson, be very proud of your delivery about our constitutional situation when it comes to our Supreme Courts and all of the things that you explained. I told you privately, but I'll tell everybody, Tom needs in his spare time to go on the road and just do little dissertations on that stuff. But meanwhile, I wanted to bring up Wiley Gault's new proposal that will be a referendum on a ballot, it sounds like to me,
yeah,
for a 2% cap on property tax, I think is what it was about. And if that's the case, what are the upsides and the downsides? The people need to learn about this so that they can realize ahead of time and be proactive about it, instead of reactive after something happens with that kind of a ballot initiative as to what the good things and the bad things are for them. So please learn about that, because that's going to be a serious thing for anybody in this state, either up or down, about their future.
It is.
So you could probably explain it better than I, Tom.
I don't know that I can. Skip, I'm gonna take the last minute here and do that. Because I do have, thank you, and thanks for your call. I appreciate that. And thanks for listening, too, and being engaged in our public discourse. I just pulled off, this is going to be a constitutional initiative, but it's going to be a citizens' constitutional initiative, I believe. And so they have to get it cleared, the language, through the Attorney General before they can start collecting signatures on it. But essentially, it is it limits on the amount of property taxes paid to 2% cap per year. Property taxes paid by all the, I'm reading here, by all the property owners of all property class types in any tax year cannot be increased by local government units by more than 2% collectively. And there's a carve out here for school districts, mill levies. They're not touching that. They really can. And also an increase, the 2% cap does not apply to if there's an increase approved by a majority vote of the electorate there. So bonds and things like that. We will. I've reached out to Senator Gault. It's calving time. So we'll get more and deeper into this one. But as part of that discussion about our overall tax structure in Montana and the necessity for changing it to make it fit. Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.